Hello, and I want to welcome everyone to the first Lyricord Early and Classical Show. We're going to do this as a regular event. I am Nick Fritsch, the president of Lyricord Discs. I've been involved with this company all my life, really, running it since 1988. My father started it in 1950, and all those things are probably a story I'll get to at some point. But right now I'm going to introduce my guest co-host, who I hope is going to be a frequent co-host, Jeffrey Dooley, the countertenor, and we're going to sit and talk about a lot of the music on the Lyricord early music series and occasionally some classical later pieces, too. So hello, Jeffrey.
Hi, Nick.
Jeffrey is an American countertenor based in New York, and he was a protege of Mark Deller and Alfred Deller, and studied in England and has done a ton of things here in the U.S. He's worked with many different orchestras, Milwaukee and Connecticut Symphony, Musica Sacra, Amor Artis, Concert Royal, Tafel Music. I could go on and on. Anything you'd like to add, Jeffrey?
Well, I also teach voice as well, and I teach the countertenor voice as well as other voices too, but I've had countertenors who have come to the city and asked me to work with them, and some of them have gone on to teach in other schools and formed their own careers.
Now, you recorded an album on Nonesuch in the late 1970s, which is really thought of as one of the seminal landmark countertenor recordings ever produced. You want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, it was a duet recording with Howard Crook, wonderful tenor, and it was recorded in 1977, and it was the first recording by American singers in many, many years of Purcell's music, and it became a landmark in a way because some of the pieces had never been recorded before. Mm-hmm. Now all of Purcell is recorded since the big Purcell year in 1995. But at that time, two pieces on the record at that time were newly recorded. And now it's all been recorded. But it was a great experience, as you most wonderfully did, reissue it on Lyricord.
Well, in 1995 or 6, I think it was 1995, Jeffrey came to my door at Lyricord. He called up and said he had this album and it was available. And he brought it over, and I listened to it, and I just was blown away. It was just a remarkable performance by all concerned. And fortunately, he and some other people had been able to wrestle it out of the jaws of Warner Brothers, and we could put it on Lyricord. And I can't tell you how many people have told me that was one of their, that was an album that really changed their life. And
it has had a strong effect in schools, too. I'm old enough now that I hear from people who say, oh, we grew up on your Purcell duet record with Howard. Right. And it has had a strong effect even today. That was 1977. And the authentic instrument movement was certainly going along. But even now, it holds up, although the instruments, the violins, are modern players. Mm-hmm. But they're both played by people who play Baroque instruments. Louis Schumann was one of the violinists who plays Baroque instruments. He was in our recording of the B minor Mass. And Edward Brewer is the harpsichordist, mm-hmm. who is a master of realizing continuo from the bass line, basso continuo, particularly with vocal music.
So we're going to hear some of Jeffrey's Purcell album in a little while. But one of the things we thought would be good to, since we do have Jeffrey here, and we seem to have an awful lot of countertenors on Lyricord, well, several in any case. There's always room for more.
Many.
You can't have too many countertenors. But in some ways that started because my father had acquired Russell Oberlin's recordings that he did on Experience on Aneem in the early 60s and late 50s, which was a spin-off of the New York Pro Musica. And when I was getting a little bit interested in maybe branching out from our world music label in the early 90s, I put on some of Russell's tapes, and at that time was not at all familiar with countertenors. And I played some of these, and it was just really took my breath away. I just thought, this is amazing. This is amazing music. Absolutely. We started the Lyricord early music series on those recordings. The first seven, which were Russell's recordings, became the first seven CDs. And, of course, Russell was the only very well-known countertenor in America. Fortunately, there's many, many other ones now.
Countertenors are everywhere now.
But I want to play a little bit of Russell's first few selections, and then Jeffrey's going to talk about the countertenor voice in general. So let's hear a little bit of Russell singing John Dowland's Come Again, Sweet Love Doth Now Invite, from John Dowland Lute Songs with Joseph Iodone on lute.
Come again, sweet love doth now invite, thy graces that refrain to do me due delight, to see, to hear, to touch, to kiss, to die with thee again in sweetest Tempted,
That was Russell Oberlin singing Come Again, Sweet Love Doth Now Invite. I still get chills when I hear that.
Yes.
It's a wonderful recording, really stellar. I thought we'd do a little very early music that Russell recorded of English monody called English Medieval Songs, St. Godric's songs from the 12th and 13th century. And this is one of my favorite. It's in Middle English, I believe.
Yes, it is. So the accompaniment has been created. Certainly they were unaccompanied songs, but it was the custom of the time to pick up an instrument and improvise a simple accompaniment against the tune. And
Seymour Barab plays viol here. I think it's very effective.
Yeah, he was an original member of Pro Musica at the time that Russell was there. But these are very evocative, and Russell has the just the right feeling. It's uniquely English in the sensibility. It's not like anything else. It's not like German troubadour or songs. It's it has that English quality, which
right, even after all these centuries.
Yes, it lingers through. Maybe it's life on an island that does it.
Let's hear this first of St. Godric's songs by Russell Oberlin with Seymour Barab. Now, Jeffrey, tell us a little bit about what a countertenor is.
The countertenor voice is basically the male alto, although we sing other parts besides alto as well. And it is the voice, really, of four centuries of music, starting with chant, really, through the 18th century into the 19th century. There's very little music written by major composers for countertenor voice because it gradually was replaced by the contralto mezzo-soprano in the 19th century. But it's the voice that, certainly in England, countertenor voice was the solo voice, often alto. And in Germany, they weren't called countertenors, but we know that Bach's chorus used boys that perhaps had grown up and used their alto voices as men. Women were not used, so the countertenor was the alto voice and sopranos, too. And by the way, anyone can sing countertenor. Any man has a falsetto voice. That's basically what it is. But the caveat is that not every man is a singer.
Right.
So in England, the tradition was much stronger in that the English choirs had male voices. The sopranos, though, were boys. And the boys sang the soprano, but the men sang the alto. And that's the typical English choral structure, boys' choir. Most people, when they think of a boys' choir, they think that, oh, the sopranos and altos must both be boys. This is truer in Germany, like the Vienna boys' choir. They're the boys and sing both soprano and alto. And the alto boys are trained sort of like tenors are trained, which gives you that distinctive sound of the German boys' choir. But the English choir maintained the countertenor voice straight through from from the 1400s onward.
Wow.
Gibbons, all these composers, Purcell, Thomas Tallis, mm-hmm. Morley, all these composers, when they wrote their alto parts, they wrote for the countertenor voice, mm-hmm. which in England was a combination of the chest voice, as it were, or the speaking voice, and the head voice, or what we would call falsetto mm-hmm. voice. Mm-hmm. And that was considered the countertenor, the falsetto voice. It wasn't necessarily called falsetto at the time. It's right. more of a later, or not later, but an Italian term for it. Mm-hmm. People tend to think of it in this country as a rarity. But the voice itself is not rare. It's whether the voice is used. Mm-hmm. So in our country, we don't really have a history for the countertenor voice, unless it's being used in Episcopal churches that use the English style. Mm-hmm. In England, the voice was always used. So mm-hmm. even a small, comparatively small cathedral choir like Guildford, for example, mm-hmm. you would always have at least two countertenors mm-hmm. at minimum. One on each side of the chancel. Mm-hmm. But the big churches, like St. Paul's, has 12 of each voice.
Wow.
Six on the decani, as it's called, mm-hmm. and six on the cantorous side mm-hmm. of the chancel. Westminster Abbey, the same mm-hmm. kind of structure. The boys were, when they went through their soprano voices and they supposedly broke, what used to happen, this was in Alvedello's day, the boys were taken out of the choir because it was thought that their voices might be injured if they continued to sing. Uh-huh. Now they don't do that anymore. They preserve what's called the cambiata voice. They let the boy continue to sing. And as the change occurs, he'll either become a chest voice singer like a baritone or mm-hmm. perhaps a tenor, or will continue using his head voice, mm-hmm. which is what Alfred Deller did. And so singers would choose, depending upon the quality of their voices, what to pursue. In this country, Russell certainly was the pioneer, although his voice is a different kind of voice than we would think of as the falsettist or head mm-hmm. voice countertenor. His voice more closely would be aligned to what we would consider to be a Welsh sound,
a very high tenor,
chest voice mm-hmm. tenor, yeah. Both are equally valid, and both have their own repertory. So that's a sort of short history of the voice.
Right.
Women didn't sing in church.
Uh-huh.
So someone had to sing those parts, and it was boys and men.
Right.
And then the castrato voice is connected to it, too,
mm-hmm.
Because as countertenors, we have inherited the repertory of the castrato voice, which is basically all of Baroque opera.
Right.
Handel, Vivaldi, probably the greatest Italian opera composer of the 18th century.
Uh-huh.
So the castrato and the countertenor are related in that the two sing in similar fashions.
Uh-huh. I imagine the rebirth of Baroque opera now, or rediscovery of it, sort of in more mainstream venues like Metropolitan Opera and New York City Opera and other opera companies, that's had a lot to do with the resurgence of the countertenor.
Oh, definitely.
Voice, right?
It most
seems
definitely.
To be an exploding range.
It is. And the very first countertenor who sang in the Lincoln Center Opera was Geoffrey Gall.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Julius Caesar with Marilyn Horne as Caesar. He sang that role.
Mm-hmm.
And he's credited as the first countertenor to perform at the Met. So when you go to hear, if you hear Handel operas today, you now hear them at the Met.
Right.
Marilyn Horne was a groundbreaker, especially with her ability to do fast fioritura. She recorded a Vivaldi opera.
Mm-hmm.
She had a tremendous influence on the way the countertenors are used today, too.
I see.
And Janet Baker.
Uh-huh.
Tremendous influence on how countertenors sing.
Right. Well, why don't we listen to a little more Russell Oberlin? Beautiful Dowlin piece, Flow My Tears.
Probably the most famous of Dowlin's laments, mm-hmm. if not the most.
All right. And this is also from John Dowlin Lute Songs with Joseph Iadone on lute.
Thank you.
Flow My Tears, Russell Oberlin, John Dowland Lute songs again, a really beautiful solo vocal piece that many countertenors do. Well, let's take a break and then we can come back and play some more, okay?
Very good.
Here's what critics say about Claudio Monteverdi's operatic masterpiece, Orfeo, on Lyricord. Alan Kozin of the New York Times exclaims that this recording by Artek, a New York ensemble directed by Gwendolyn Toth, captures much of the work's vitality and depth and boasts a superb Orfeo in Jeffrey Thomas. Dana Hanchard and Paul Shipper also bring characters to their various roles, but the real attraction is the instrumental playing. These players have a flair for ornamentation, and even when they go over the top, the results are compelling. Heidi Wilson of Billboard raves, a luminous account of this magical opera in its first American recording. Toth's fine period instrument ensemble lets the music dance, yet her expansive, almost romantic conception of the piece sacrifices no emotional detail. Tenor Jeffrey Thomas inhabits the central role. Mezzo-soprano Jennifer Lane is especially touching. The resonance of the church where it was recorded meshes beautifully with Toth's open, flexible sound. Experience Artek's Orfeo for yourself on download or CD by visiting www.lyricord.com today.
I'm back here talking with Jeffrey Dooley on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. Now, Jeffrey, you going to tell us a little more about countertenors?
I think that you can't really discuss the countertenor without talking about the castrato voice, too, because they're in my own particular opinion, theory, can't be proved, but it's just a theory, the sound can be similar. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to help edit the only recording of a castrato. It was done in the 1920s, and
the last castrato,
the
right?
Last castrato, yes. Alessandro Moreschi, mm-hmm. And the sound of that voice. Of course, it's recording with a non-electric mm-hmm. recording with a wax disc, a wax cylinder. However, there is a similarity there as you listen to it, and mm-hmm. it sounds like a high countertenor using chest voice for the low notes. Mm-hmm. So, in short. To make clear, well, castrato is a male singer who has the tube between the testicles cut at before puberty, mm-hmm. which sounds very brutal. And what it did, it prevented testosterone from forming as the person grew up. And the theory was that if this was a boy with a beautiful voice, we could do this, and he might become a great artist. Great artists like Farinelli, Caffarelli, Guadagni, these first superstars were castrati mm-hmm. in the 18th century. And so the voice itself is a head register, like the countertenor as we think of it today. I've sung some of those pieces, and there is a connection between the sound of the countertenor voice and the castrato, uh-huh. or the mezzo-soprano and the castrato.
Right.
So those are the big differences. So to sing the castrato repertory, as countertenors, we've sort of inherited it, especially the alto parts. Mm-hmm. And so in baroque opera, the male parts were sung in Handel, both women and men. Mm-hmm. But in Italy, always a castrato. Uh-huh. So I feel, personally, that I'm not sure that the castration was what made the singers successful. It was the incredible rigorous training that they experienced. They were kept in a separate part of the conservatories, in the top floor where it was warm. Mm-hmm. They wore a uniform together when they went out in public, and they only sang with their teachers, even in public. They always had their instructors with them. So they were taught in such a rigorous way that they were able to do amazing feats. Mm-hmm. And the countertenor voice was trained in similar ways. So the two voices, I think, are similar. I feel, myself, that it's the training.
I think maybe we want to hear some other countertenors. Most of the countertenors who perform today are falsettists, using their falsetto voice.
Yes, and that word that to contain such a negative connotation, but it shouldn't be a negative connotation, but it just has to do with more with art.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the word false means not real, you know, right. And people have often said that to me, well, are you a real countertenor? So I sort of pinch myself, and if it hurts, I guess I am.
Yeah, right. All right. This is Drew Minter, who you've someone you've worked with
yes,
over the
colleague.
Years.
We've sung together.
Wonderful countertenor, singing Frescobaldi's Aria di Passacaglia.
An impossible word.
This is from our Love Letters from Italy, which was by Artek, came out a number of years ago. So let's give that a listen. Drew Minter singing Frescobaldi. Really an extraordinary voice.
Wonderful. Still.
Drew actually was a grew up as a boy treble at Washington Cathedral Choir, and then studied in Indiana at Indiana University, and also in Vienna, and has gone on to just a huge career for several years now.
Yes. And he was at St. Thomas Church, too.
Uh-huh.
That's where I met him. And
right.
So Drew and I have been singing for a long time. I met Drew when I came to New York in 1975. We met at a cafeteria, and we were just talking about the countertenor voice. And so at that time, he wasn't sure whether he was going to pursue the baritone mm-hmm. or the countertenor voice. He was still making the decision.
Uh-huh.
So this is true of most countertenors. Have two voices, and it's a matter of choice of which one they want to use if both voices are of equal quality.
Right.
And in Drew's case, both voices were equal. And then over time, he decided to continue with the countertenor voice.
Mm-hmm.
And
did he completely give up singing baritone?
He has done a few things, I think, yeah. Now, he uses it for the chest register
mm-hmm.
The way most of us do. I used to do the same thing.
Right. Let's see, we could play Larry Lipnick, who is someone else you've worked with.
Yes, Larry's a dear friend. Yes. Worked with him for many years. We had a group together
uh-huh.
For a while called Music's Monument, which he was in. And he's a gamba player.
Yes, that's right.
He's in both Parthenia, the ensemble, and the New York Concert of Viols. We've sung the Ode on the Death of Henry Purcell together for two countertenors and recorders.
Well, let's hear him perform Farewell, False Love by William Byrd with the New York Concert of the Viols. That was Lawrence Lipnick, Larry Lipnick, with the New York Concert of the Viols, Judith Davidoff's group. It's been a New York fixture for many years. And that album is music of William Byrd on the Lyricord Early Music Series. Well, Jeffrey, I think we're going to pick this up again next time for Volume 2 of The Countertenor. And thank you for being with us today.
Very good.
And we'll be seeing you next time.
Program copyright 2009 Lyricord Discs. All rights reserved. In the next episode of the Lyricord Early and Classical Show podcast, Nick Fritsch and Jeffrey Dooley continue their exploration of the countertenor voice, this time concentrating on duets between countertenors and sopranos in both Renaissance and Baroque music. Duets featuring countertenor Marshall Coyd and soprano Julianne Baird are featured, and Jeffrey discusses the development of the careers of countertenor Alfred Deller, James Bowman, Mark Deller, and others.
Canterbury was being bombed, and Tippett said, "I heard the singer, and the centuries rolled back."
Be sure not to miss The Countertenors Part 2, the next episode of the Lyricord Early and Classical Show podcast.